This episode of the Agile Uprising podcast is brought to you by VGroup Digital. VGroup Digital provides native cloud-based software development services on iOS, Android, web, Mac, and Windows, as well as enterprise product development, maintenance, and support. VGroup Digital is led by a team of agile practitioners who believe in collaboration, constant feedback, and delivering the highest value at all times. Visit www.vgroupdigital.com for more info and mention the Agile Uprising podcast to get up to 15% off all development services.
This is the Agile Uprising podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Agile Uprising podcast. Tonight we're going to be talking about the product owner, the sort of unicorn in the agile industry, you know, going through actually what makes a good product owner, sort of experiences around the product owner. And I'm lucky enough to have Colleen Johnson and Ryan Lockhart with me tonight. So I'm going to just sort of kick it over to them, allow them to give themselves a brief introduction, and we'll get started on this interesting topic. So Colleen, you want to go ahead and get started?
Sure. Thanks, Andrew. My name is Colleen Johnson. I am the Practice Director of Lean and Agile Transformation for ImagineX Consulting. I've been in the software industry for about 15 years and in Agile, practicing some form of Agile coaching and consulting for about half of that time.
And I'm Ryan Lockhart. I've been on the show a couple times. I am a software development manager and Agile coach. Colleen was more prepared. I can't give you the number of years. We'll just go with a few. But yeah, happy to be here.
Awesome. Colleen, you want to give us a little sort of background on maybe what your experience has been around the product owner role?
Sure. So I think a lot of the organizations that I work with that are starting out and are new to Agile tend to have a kind of a dotted line between their either business analyst into a product owner or project manager into their product owner. I don't think either are really typically a great fit. And I think what you tend to see when you draw that dotted line from either of those roles to the PO role is that you end up with a person who is super focused on the work that's in flight. And that can be really beneficial for a new Scrum team or a new Agile team that's getting off the ground and needs a little bit of guidance and figuring out how to manage the day-to-day. But over time, I think that becomes a little bit of a crutch for the team. And they don't really learn how to practice a lot of those self-management skills and learn a lot of those tools that they need to be a really autonomous team. And I think the other thing that does over time is that the product owner becomes less and less focused on the customer advocacy role that's super important to what they do. So a big part of their job needs to be focusing upstream on what's next, what's the next thing that we need to be doing. And the more they become really ingrained in the day-to-day, the less focus there is on making sure that there's work prepared for the team to pull. So I think a lot of organizations that are starting out, that's what you see. You see a lot of product owners that are really focused on just managing the work that's in flight. And it's really hard to start to swing that pendulum the other direction so that they become a true advocate for the customer and really a voice of the customer for the team and less of a day-to-day project manager.
So when you sort of say, you know, voice of the customer, you know, advocate for the team, defining sort of the vision of what they should or prioritizing the backlog, the only reason I'm sort of jumping on this is this was a hot topic for me today, so I apologize. A little bit of emotional. It's emotional for me today.
It's fair.
Around the business value, in your experience, have you seen product owners really sort of taking that value or taking that premise and really driving towards business value and defining what is valuable for the business as opposed to points, delivery, percent complete, really trying to drive and be that, I hate this term, but I'll say it, and the buzzword, the change agent for the organization to help pollinate that business value sort of proposition?
I mean, I think it's kind of the same thing, right? I think the more you can get them out of the day-to-day operations of, you know, what did the team do today, or what's happening with the team, the more they're managing the day-to-day work of the team and the work that's in flight, the harder it is for them to step back and step up a level and focus on business value and customer value first. So I think it's a little bit of how the organization structures their values and their metrics and how they're measuring a team, so that they're focused more on, are they getting the business value, so that the product owner can be the advocate for that. I think if the focus is really on like points per week, or these really low level metrics that aren't really defining success for the business, the organization, or the customer, the product owners get stuck there. That's not necessarily any fault of their own. It's, you know, I think Ryan had a great post recently about how metrics drive behavior, and we looked at what happened with Wells Fargo. And I think this is a great example of where what a business focuses on and what they choose to measure is going to drive the behavior of their product owners as well.
I think it goes without, well, not without saying, but I think it's worth saying that while there's no easy role in a well-functioning Agile team, the product owner role is the reason that we have a lot of conversations around the role of the product owner is because it is damn hard. And I actually say it's probably the hardest role on an Agile team, not to belittle the other roles, but somebody that has their foot in the market and in the delivery cycle at the exact same time is a really tough position to fill. I can honestly say that with the exception of the program I'm working in now, I've never seen it done well in the past. You either have hyper-technical product owners or hyper-detached product owners that are focused on the market. Finding people that can balance both is it's becoming rare, or at least it's been rare in my experience. I'm curious if you guys have had different experiences.
So that's a very interesting topic to sort of roll into it, in the sense of, you know, the engagement of the product owner and sort of that definition up front. I know for me, I sort of tend to lean towards what you said, Ryan, and emulate that. Of I haven't seen it done well. I shouldn't say well. I haven't seen it effectively implemented in the sense of giving them the empowerment that they need and really positioning that product owner position or title to really be empowered to make the decisions that warrant you as a true product owner. And I think it's interesting because I almost feel like we've spent a lot of time in defining and ramping up the Scrum Master role and sort of defining Scrum. I almost feel like the product owner is now sort of coming to the forefront because maybe you're operating well in a Scrum environment, but you don't have that good, you know, funnel coming in of good quality sort of business value driven requirements or stories where you do have that engaged product owner that is really feeding the team or as a part of the team, not even feeding the team, but truly inserted themselves as a team member and driving that sort of vision and making sure that the delivery is focused around business value.
Well, here's kind of the point that I'm going to try to make tonight, but I'll just go out and say it rather than be discreet or hidden about it. We spend a lot of time and effort focusing our energies on optimizing technical delivery. We have highly engaged Scrum Masters that are there to help coach teams to be more efficient. We have teams that are focusing on XP practices to write the cleanest, most scalable, most stable, most testable, readable code. If we're building the wrong stuff, it's all wasted effort, right? If we don't have somebody that is putting the most prioritized work in front of the teams, that is giving the team the problem context so that they can be that well-functioning machine of value delivery, then we're better off either going to the bar or the golf course and hanging out for a day because we're just wasting our time. That's why the product owner role is so important.
So do you guys think that organizations understand that? And well, I know the answer to that in my world, no. But how do you educate an organization to really embrace that theory and know that this is part of sort of the transformation of whatever you want to brand it, Agile? We want to say it's Agile, then how do you empower organizations to really drive to make that impact? to show that, hey, the product owner role is an important, critical role. I mean, this is really part of the process. Have you guys had any sort of success, or, you know, is there anything that you've experienced that has helped blossom that or pollinate that across an organization?
I think, like Ryan said, I would 100% agree that for most of my career, this, just like you said, Andrew, it is kind of the unicorn. I think it's an undervalued and underappreciated role. I think it's also an incredibly hard role to staff correctly. I think depending on the structure of the organization, we tend to look for the wrong, we tend to focus our energy on the wrong strengths when hiring for it. But I think one of the other things you see, not just with what you're talking about, with seeing a really strong alignment to customer value and having really happy customers when you have a strong product owner, I think you also see a really sharp increase in the team satisfaction and the team happiness. Because I've worked with a lot of teams where the product owner is really almost overly heavy-handed in story writing and their involvement in handing requirements down to the team. And it's such a low level where the team feels like they have no input, no creative opportunity or voice in the way that features get written or designed, and they leave. You know, that's not, we hire a lot of smart engineers to work on these teams, and if they don't have the opportunity to think through how something's going to work and how it's going to be developed, they're not challenged. And I think when you see that switch of product owners moving more towards customer advocacy, you also get to see a lot of teams take a bigger role in defining how a feature is going to be built and how it's going to be broken down. So you see happy customers and happier developers. And I think that's one of the things that's a huge win for organizations that really understand what that role looks like.
So let's take a step back, because I actually had a really interesting conversation today with some Agile practitioners, and we were talking about transformation, and the person I was talking with was going through or in the midst of an Agile transformation currently, and they were talking about product owners that were very market facing and very busy. So they have BAs on the team that take instruction from a product owner and then work out the stories and deconstruct the stories with the teams themselves. And I, in my very tactful way, I approach this by pointing out that that is a crutch, and it's probably while it's okay as a transitionary state, it should not be part of the long-term solution, in my opinion, because you either need an available product owner or you need you absolutely need an available product owner. And the function that that BA is serving is devaluing both the role of the product owner and the ownership state of the team. The team should be owning the work, and the product owner should be there to define the problems to the team and be available to support them during the sprint.
Yeah.
I'm curious what you guys feel about the what tends to be the intersection of the traditional waterfall BA in an Agile team as it relates to a product owner.
I don't know. This touches near and dear to my heart for being a BA as long as I was. I think that,
it's good. I'm happy to tell you you're wrong.
I know you are. I think that the BA, again, we could really go down a rat hole on this, but I think there is value, and I think that the BA could support the product owner when the product owner is in transition. So to me, it's been very hard in the Agile adoption sort of process or premise that getting a fully dedicated product owner 100% of the time is utopia in my mind.
But what about post, like, so I'll be happy to say that you're never done a transformation. There is no end state. But let's just say when you get over the major hurdle, like when you cross that initial chasm of transformation, do you still think that the BA should be an augmentation to the product owner role on a transformed team or a team that's gone over the chasm?
Well, you're contradicting yourself. You just said you're never fully transformed, so I don't know.
Oh, Jesus. My point is this, right?
So I'll give you the Mike McCalla, Agile answer. It depends. So It could or it couldn't. I don't know. I mean, I think from a team perspective, if the team is operating well, and whether you have a mix of BA, QA, dev, PO, whatever it may be, I mean, if the team is operating well, why be disruptive? So if it's working, then it's best served to the team to have those resources, which we all love that term, heartbeats, as you like to call it, Ryan.
Yes.
You know, around having that team continue to perform well with the people that they have on that team. Who cares what their title is?
I'll give you that. Actually, I don't know if I've ever known a product owner with the title of product owner, but yeah, no, I'll give you that. But yeah, I'm going to give you my experience. My experience is that when you have a BA on an Agile team, it's usually a trailing indicator of some other dysfunction within the team. It's either you have, and I'm pretty sure I'm repeating myself at this point, you either have a disengaged PO that's not available to the team, or you have a team that's not interested in writing and deconstructing their own work items, user stories, whatever you want to call it. And I like to use that as an opportunity to figure out what's going on. To me, it's just really hard for me to compartmentalize or to figure out why a team would need a BA if they have a high level of trust and a high level of engagement with the product owner.
Well, I think that gets back to giving the team a lot of authority and autonomy to figure out how to define and break the work down, right? So the product owner brings the what and the team breaks down the how. And I think that sometimes that BA role ends up being that crutch that I think one of you guys said, it becomes a little bit of a crutch for the team in figuring out the how, where you're spoon-feeding the team and taking away a lot of their creative opportunity and creative license. And at some point you're going to lose, you know, you hire the best people in the world, you take away that time for them to explore a problem and come up with a solution on their own. They're going to leave. You're going to lose people.
I'll hire them.
But I like watching that relationship between a business analyst and a developer, or a business systems analyst and a developer, where they're working in tandem and partnership and sort of creating that solution. It adds an additional layer of creativity that maybe I get the product owner, I get the crutch sort of view, but if the BA is inserted in the team and can deal with the day-to-day minutia and sort of be an extension of the product owner, I don't see that as a crutch. I see that as empowering the team to operate at a higher level than just being developers. And maybe I'm radical in my view. I don't know. I've seen value in having business analysts or business systems analysts being part of that process to enable a developer or to partner with a developer to kind of look at things in a different view. It's almost like a point of enlightenment.
Your BA brethren really, really appreciate you right now.
Yeah, so let me ask this. BA background.
Yeah, Colleen, you made a really cool point. You were talking about the values and the traits that may sometimes be desired by mistake when hiring a product owner. When you look for a product owner, when you're looking to either staff one for one of your teams or you're looking to hire one for a client, what is the prototypical product owner's experience and personality and approach to delivery look like to you? What are you looking for? What are you keying in on?
And before you answer that,
go.
Also add, because Ryan and I are going to keep fighting for the mic, also add in that sort of thought process around, does it make sense to hire internal or external? So is it better to have an internal business person or technical person in that role, or is it, you know, through experience? So I'll stop there.
Okay. Let me start at the beginning. So I guess I focus on more what I'm not looking for. And I think that a lot of times, like I mentioned, you see a lot of people with really strong project management backgrounds who can run a Gantt sheet all day or Gantt chart all day, who can manage a project, you know, with their eyes closed. Those are the people that I tend to not want. I want the people who are really rooted in understanding lean startup principles, who want to experiment and talk to customers and get out of the building and really connect with the people using the software and using what we're building. and understanding their problems. And those are the product owners I usually want to hire and find the right fit for that person who's really going to be the voice of the customer to the team. Because I think you can bridge that gap between understanding the customer and breaking the work down with having a good Scrum Master or having a team that's really well versed in working through story mapping. But I think once you have a really good understanding of the problem that you're trying to solve, which is kind of what you said, right? We can be fastest to market, but if we're fastest to market with something that isn't solving their problem, then who cares? Mm-hmm. So I think I look for a PO that can really understand the customer, connect with them well, and then be able to be that voice and steer the ship for the team and let the team figure out how to break down their work, document their work, slice it in logical ways. But I think that when you focus really hard on project management skills for that role, you lose that hard connection back to the customer and what problem you're trying to solve. And I, you know, to your point, Andrew, I don't think it has to be internal or external. I think it could go either way. I think you can find that person, whether it's an internal employee or an external employee, but I think that's a really hard fit. And I think, you know, a lot of us in the tech space hate getting out of our seats and getting out of the building and going to talk to people. So finding a good product owner who's like, yes, I can't wait to leave and go talk to 18 people I don't know. Good luck.
So if not the project manager, I mean, if you don't have a straight answer, that's cool. And I'm putting you on the spot, but if not the project manager, where do you normally see these people emerging from? What traditional role are you usually cherry picking these guys from or gals?
You know, I think it depends. I think it's more on personality to me than it is on a previous role or previous experience. I've seen some great product owners come out of customer care type of roles where they're constantly interfacing with the customers on a regular basis and are super in tune with the problems that they're having or things that are missing for them. It can be that voice very easily. And I think, you know, that lean startup mentality around like, let's try 15 things or ask 15 questions and come up with, you know, what they want or what they're struggling with. And then go to the team with, here's the problem we're trying to solve. But to me, it's more personality than it is past role.
How about you, Andrew? Any ideas of some previous role? Yeah.
So subtle.
I've had a mix of good experience and bad experience. For me, the better experiences have been around whether there's subject matter experts within sort of the vertical that they report to. That could be in the BA space, or it could be even in sort of the management space. Mm-hmm. I think it comes down to me, I've liked the product owner role to sit internally because they already have the relationships built, hopefully, to be able to sort of know who to talk to, know who to get sort of answers quickly from, to not sort of have things wait. So for me, it's the art of, again, it's sort of the core fundamentals of what makes a good agile, I don't know, resource person, agilist. I don't know what buzz term we want to use, but it's the art of the facilitation. So literally saying, this is what I need and how do I go get it? Mm. So I think you need to have some domain expertise and understand sort of when to filter things out and sort of, drive the conversation in a different direction, because everyone likes to complain about how they're unique and they're the hardest process in the world and their software doesn't do this, blah, blah, blah. So to me, my experience has been around more of the business centric folks. Mm-hmm. So whether that be some BA that sits on the business or some sort of management focus on the business, my least effective experience has been with technical folks becoming product owners, because they constantly dive into the actual solution and it creates a lot more work.
I think the only, I'm sorry. I think, you know, so I say I'm sorry and then I just keep talking.
Go ahead, Ryan.
The only, and Andrew, I actually agree with you for the first time in the history of ever.
Oh my God. We're just going to end the podcast now.
Mic drop.
But the only time that I think a technical person does facilitate well in a product owner role is if you're using an internally facing technical product. Like if the team is focused on something that's not market facing, if the customer in the market is a technical internal client, then at that time, yeah, it does kind of make sense to have somebody that's has a technical background. But that's the edge case, man. You actually hit it pretty spot on there.
So, Andrew, I wanted to ask you, in that example you just had, if you were working with a team that didn't have a BA, would you recommend that they get one?
Oh, man. Oh, wow, you guys.
Man, I'm loading both barrels.
Really, you're crushing me tonight. No, I wouldn't recommend you go out and get a BA. To me, if a BA has been on the team or is being consumed by the team, I wouldn't say you would go out and just hire a BA off the street. I think there's a level of domain expertise that a BA possesses that is working in that fashion that adds a lot of value to a Scrum team that is new. So again, it's that partnership. It's not being the product owner, and it's also not being a developer. It's almost being sort of the glue between the two. It says, okay, I understand the business and I understand some of the technical. I can sort of translate that and kind of play both sides. So that's the long answer to your question, Colleen. No, I would say I would not go outside and hire a new BA off the street.
Hey, actually, let me just make something clear. Like, I think BAs are actually, in traditional waterfall projects, BAs have a damn difficult job. And it's not that I think that they don't have value in the Agile space. I just think I have seen BAs make transitions into product ownership. I've seen BAs make transitions into Scrum Master roles. I've seen BAs transition into testing capacity on a delivery team. And I've also seen BAs transition into BAs on other waterfall projects because they did not like Agile. So it's not that I discredit the value that a BA brings to a team. I just think it needs, in well-functioning teams that are over that initial like standard deviation of transformation, so I did it that time. I think that they their role is reimagined on the team if they stay on the Agile teams.
So Colleen, you posed the question to me, what's your experience been around with the, you know, since Ryan and I are a little polarized on this, what's sort of your opinion on the business analyst role or, you know, incorporating into a team to either assist or conflict with the product owner?
I think I've seen BAs work the best on teams where you're doing like outsourced product development. So I feel like for an engineering organization that's doing internal development for their company, I feel like it's kind of a double role with the product owner and what the product owner is being asked to do. I have seen it be more of a requirement when the company or the team is doing externally facing development, so outsourced development. And I think that then you tend to have a product owner who's really like the customer, the person interacting with the customer, and then the BA translating that back to the team. So it's almost like a secondary PO, I guess, in my mind. But I haven't seen a lot of companies have a BA and a PO for internal software development.
So I know you focus a lot, and maybe I don't know. So I'll ask the question. In the Kanban universe, which I feel like you have a really good grasp on, and you can certainly promote your brand on that, do you see that role at all?
Yeah, and it's one of the things I usually kind of, I don't want to say, I mean, I feel like it sounds shitty to say I warn companies this, but I do. Like, I think I typically, when I'm coaching teams or helping them transition to Kanban, I feel like I'm kind of doomsday-ish with the product owner, because I think the product owner role changes dramatically from Scrum to Kanban, in the sense that with Kanban, you're it's kind of an ebb and flow of backlog grooming, getting requirements together, making sure the team has stuff ready to pull. But there's a cadence to that with Scrum that aligns with the team cadence and the team planning cycles. With Kanban, you might have less of that to do, but you have to do it every day. And so for companies that I coach that are trying to adopt Kanban, I typically tell them, if you don't have a good product owner in that role and somebody that's 100% available to the team, your Kanban adoption is not going to work.
So this could open up an entirely new can of worms. So I think this is interesting. So do you think a product owner can go from Scrum to Kanban to any of the scaling methodologies? Is it the same person, or do you have to have a different mindset to handle all the different sort of factions of Agile at the moment?
Well, there's a lot of differences. I think all of this is just personality driven to me more than anything, right? I think some of us are more adept at it than others. I'm not great at change, and I know that, and I know what I like and don't like. So I don't fall into that camp of somebody that's going to be really excited to step outside the things that I, you know, that I love and feel really passionate about doing. Other people are better at that. But I think from a product owner perspective, I think the needs are different. The needs are different for a product owner in SAFe, in Scrum and Kanban. Does that mean that they can't be the same person? No, I think they can be, but I think that there's a learning curve and a different need for each of those methodologies that has to be really understood and recognized as you shift across those methodologies.
I'd love to see the organization that's running Scrum, Kanban, and SAFe in parallel.
I might have one for you.
I think we can name a couple, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Definitely.
Not that they're doing, they may not be doing it well, but I'm sure we can name a few.
They're trying.
I think you summed that up well. I think that was actually towards the tail end of your conversation, and just around, you know, what you sort of stated in that makes sense. I'd be curious to hear sort of your spin on it, Ryan, just in the sense of, I think that I've had more experience in the Scrum sort of universe. So I have, you know, done the mixed environment of Kanban, but I'm nowhere near the level of, you know, I haven't upped my level of Kanban expertise like someone like you, Colleen. So Ryan, I'd be curious to hear what you think.
Yeah. So from what I know of Colleen, I'm not at her level on Kanban either, but I do have teams that run Scrum and Kanban. Like some teams are Scrum teams and primarily Scrum teams, and other teams that are primarily Kanban teams. My only exposure to SAFe in the professional space, like outside of my own independent learning, was horrendous and should not be considered for this conversation. but I've seen, for me, I've noticed the product owners that switch from being a product owner on a Scrum team over to the product owner on a Kanban team, I haven't seen that much of discord between the two. Simply because they're working within the context of the same platform, same technical platform, serving the same customers in the same market. So when you're living in that similar context, it's just a matter of making sure that the right items are fed to the team in the way that they're used to seeing it. So you're taking the problems. When they deliver problems to the Scrum teams, they're slightly larger than the problems that they're delivering to the Kanban teams, because the Kanban teams are more of a, when they pull work in, it has to be properly sized for them. I'm going to ask Colleen now, is that a proper way of looking at this, or am I misleading these teams?
Well, no, I think you're right. I mean, I think what you're asking the product owners to do is, the job isn't different. I guess what I was kind of getting at with the difference between Scrum and Kanban from a product owner perspective is more around batch size. Mm. So when you think about what you're preparing 2 weeks of work every 2 weeks. So it's that ramp up, right, of you have to get everything ready for planning and backlog grooming and all of this to be queued up every 2 weeks. So there's a ramp of preparing for that, but you have to have 2 weeks of work ready. Where with a Kanban system, your batch size is a lot smaller. So you're almost doing backlog grooming and prioritization daily. And you're making sure that there's always something ready for the team to pull. But it might be one story, you know, it might be one story every day that you're figuring out what's the next most important story. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's more to me of like, leveling out that work for the product owner rather than that, the batching of the work from a Scrum perspective. So I think the work and the, you know, the values that we talked about are the same for the role. It's, I guess, the involvement that feels slightly different to me.
I think it's actually worth saying, I mean, it's for me, I think it would be very hard for a transforming organization to manage both a Scrum team and a Kanban team in parallel. It's one of those things that you need some maturity under you before you start trying to run multi frameworks, because just managing one is more than a handful during transformation.
So I just bit my tongue and I'm bleeding profusely out of my mouth at the moment.
Oh, tell me you're doing that. You're trying to run multi frameworks during transformation. But
we'll save that for another topic on Agile Uprising, whether it be a podcast or a chat out on the coalition. But
is that honestly it? Are you going through a transformation where they're trying to do more than one framework?
I will incorporate Kanban and Scrum teams depending upon the situation. Yeah. I don't see it as conflicting or competing.
Wait, I'm sorry. I realize you want to punt this, but I might actually agree with you. And I want to clarify my point. Are you saying within one team executing Scrum and Kanban? Are you saying?
Well, if I'm doing it with one team, I might, to a team that is just starting, I might instill WIP limits. So literally doing that sort of Scrumban approach.
Yeah.
So still estimating and still instilling some of those Kanban practices, but I'm not running pure Scrumban, pure Scrum or pure Kanban.
Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing with you. I don't know that that's ideal just because of the ease of transformation and stuff, but I don't completely disagree with that. What my point was, having product owner Steve being in charge of team A that is Scrum and team B that is Kanban at the same time during an early stage transformation, I think that's a little bit too disjointed, and there's too much learning to be acquired too quickly that somebody's going to be misserved.
So I would challenge you on that, saying that Steve should be delivering business value. So who cares how the Scrum team or Kanban team is handling it, right? So if the business value is being pushed into the team, that whether it's Kanban or Scrum should be irrelevant. It's just a matter of timelines at that point, you know, whether you're limiting WIP or you're doing estimates or whatever you want to call it. To me, the product owner, and Colleen said this, you know, when she was talking, in the sense of it's the core values and sort of what the product owner definition should be about.
Mm-hmm.
It's delivering that consistent sort of business value and understanding truly what should be delivered. So you prioritize that into the funnel, whether the output Scrum or, you know, Kanban, it shouldn't matter.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, I think you can find the person that can play a role, the PO role across a Scrum team and a Kanban team. And I've been in a similar place as you, Andrew, where I'm working with organizations that have Scrum and Kanban teams all rolling up to the same portfolio and enterprise level system. And I think it can work. And I think it's, you know, there's different challenges with it when you fold in release cadences and some of the other, you know, the other parts of the puzzle. But, and I think the PO can cross those teams, but it comes back to that cadence and that rhythm of, you have one team that needs you there every day to constantly pick what's the next highest thing to work on, and another team where you can feed them 2 weeks worth of work and then kind of move off. And is that possible? Sure. Can that be the same person? I think so. But I think it's just the balance of the team's needs at that point.
I've poorly made my point because I agree with what you guys are saying. My concern isn't about the value delivery or the teams. It's actually about a product owner during transformation having to find their own way and finding ways to be of service to the two different teams, formats. But cool, we can move on.
You know what, Ryan, to pull that in, I agree with you. I think that's a very hard thing to do. I don't think in early adoption that is something that you want to sort of muddy the water with. It's better to have a single-threaded approach in that sense and sort of then iterate from there, you know, when you want to sort of, you get a little more experience under your belt, maybe.
You've made my point better than I have. Thank you.
Sure. When we're talking about, since we're hitting on it, backlog refinement, this is a topic that, you know, is interesting to me because it seems that it's not focused on maybe enough, or it's over and sort of it almost becomes a task. All right, we know that, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we need to do backlog refinement at 1 o'clock. So as a product owner, do you enforce that on the team and work with the scrum master to make sure that's done?
Wait, did you just say you're doing refinement 3 days a week?
Well, I was using that as a bad scenario. That was a scenario that we started to have to push to the team because they weren't doing any. So, you know, going into one of the coaching engagements I was in, the product owners were not effectively pushing that agenda. So the story quality had gone down significantly.
Okay. Sorry, I stepped on your question.
Yeah, and you just totally derailed me. So now I'm just going to hang up.
it's easier than you would imagine.
Yeah.
I think, though, I mean, to what you're saying, Andrew, I think that I have worked at a lot of companies where the product owner is like a proxy because it's more like product owner by committee. And I think the unfortunate part of not giving the product owner the autonomy to make decisions over the backlog and the priority is when you have somebody standing at stand up, and it doesn't matter if it's Scrum or Kanban, you end up with somebody at your stand up where the team is saying, what's the next most important thing? Or what do you want us to do with this issue that's blocked? Or, you know, how should we handle this, you know, this question for the customer? And if the answer is, I don't know, I have to wait until the next project, you know, product steering committee meeting or the next whatever steering group it is to make that decision, then why the hell do you have a product owner, right? And I think that's what a lot of organizations end up with because there's a group mentality around the product owner role where you have somebody there that's a proxy that doesn't actually have the authority to make any of those decisions. And I think that can be kind of a crippling point for companies, not just adopting Agile, but, you know, 2 years into their Agile practices where you have a product owner that doesn't actually have the authority to make any decisions for the team. And it's a weird place to put them in.
Yeah. I mean, Andrew, when you mentioned in the example, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, backlog refinements, the reason I keyed in on that is because I had a team member come to me and just, you know, one of the sensitivities I have when people talk about Agile or Scrum is that there's too many meetings. And I had a developer that came to me and said, I'm in too many meetings. I'm not actually writing enough code. I'm not actually working enough. And we deconstructed on the board. I said, you know, let's just figure this out. Let's figure out how many meetings you should be in. And then anything that's above and beyond that, we'll try to understand why, right? It was a great five whys exercise because it turned out they were in a lot of backlog refinements. And after five whying it, the problem was not that the product owner did not have the they weren't going by product owner by committee. They just didn't know the product. Right? So I think going through and understanding, usually when you see too many refinement meetings, it's an indicator of some other dysfunction upstream. It's either an empowerment, it's a product owner by committee, or it's a just general lack of knowledge of what it is that they're trying to refine the product itself that's represented in the backlog. Because if you can't present the backlog items, whether you call them stories or issues or whatever you want to call them, if you can't present them as a problem statement with an identification of a persona that you're solving the problem for to any great degree, then that story is not ready to go to the team. And if you have no stories that are ready to go to the team, you probably have a product owner that needs to be, you know, enhanced.
So I don't disagree with that at all.
This is like the Ryan and Andrew agree show.
This is rare. It must be some sort of weird planetary alignment.
I'll see.
Mercury is rising.
Hey, go Mercury. So what's your guys' opinion about the chief product owner then? So I see this a lot. They have this chief product owner, and then they say they have these other product owners. So is the product owner, what's the role of the chief product owner? Is it to make all the decisions? Is it to get fed the questions from the product owners? Or is it to help the product owners remove any sort of blockers that they can't make decisions on? So is it a, you know, an escalation path? So I struggle with this because it's something that I'm seeing more and more of, where you have a chief product owner and then you have product owners under that chief product owner across multiple applications, let's say. So multiple portfolios in an organization, you might have one product chief product owner and you might have 50 product owners. Have you guys seen any of that or experienced any of that?
Colleen, do you have experience with chief product owner?
I do. And I do think it tends to be kind of a hindrance if that chief product owner is like the gate, you know, the gate to the decision-making process. I guess I've seen it both ways though. I've seen product, you know, whatever you want to call it, director of product management or whatever the title is for the head of the product group. I have seen that role also be really successful in structuring the process and the way that they interact with their team and being more of, I mean, just think of it as like the agile PMO, right? Where you're guiding your coaches, you're not dictating what your coaches do or how they do it, but you're kind of guiding the ship and helping build great coaches and help mentor great coaches. And I've seen that role be more in that vein as well. So I wouldn't say that I have like a strong conversion to hearing that there's a head of the product group, but I think it totally depends on the company, what they expect that role to do and whether or not that ends up being a hindrance to that decision-making process or somebody that's really helping build great product owners.
Yeah. I mean, my experience is this, I've never had anyone titled a chief product owner, but what I have had is product owners that have bosses. And the way that I handle it in my current engagement is this, we call it the product council meeting, but it's basically a calibration session, kind of like a scrum of scrums just for the product team. I attend it as well as some of the technology leads, but it's just to make sure that we have a rounded conversation. And the purpose of the meeting is not to break any decision ties or to make any, to give any guidance to help with the current sprint. We're usually looking at the roadmap, like we have rolling roadmaps. So we're looking at the roadmap going forward. Hey, are these things still prioritized properly for future sprints? Or from a release planning perspective, are we going in the right direction? Do we need to make any changes? Are there any fresh contracts that are coming in that we need to, do some adjusting for? I think the idea of an all in and mighty empowered chief product owner that has to go to for every decision creates artificial queuing and artificial bottlenecks that just make me angry.
Oh, definitely. I would totally agree with that. And I think that that's the same concept I was talking about with that, like kind of product owner by committee. If you can't give your product owner the authority and the autonomy to help make decisions on the fly, then I feel like why have one?
Exactly.
That's why you have them there on the ground with the team.
So let me ask you this. From a sprint review perspective, quite often what I've noticed is that I represent the sprint review as an opportunity for the delivery teams. I'm sorry, I specifically call them delivery teams because I think that that label is important. But without guidance, usually the development team or the developers on the delivery team like to drive that conversation. And what ends up happening is they get, because of their nature, they get very technical and they talk about the refactoring that they did or the latest JavaScript libraries that they used when they implemented this feature. What I'm trying to do now is push more for the product owners to, be the ones delivering that message in the sprint review because it provides the business context and it actually speaks more to the value than it does to the technical execution. I'm curious what you guys have seen with that. If it's something that you've advocated for, or if you just leave it be, and it's another one where Ryan's just kicking sacred cows for the sake of it.
Don't kick the cows.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I have a really strong opinion on this, which is pretty rare for me, but, I guess I've seen sprint reviews go all different ways in terms of who drives them and who accepts, at the end of the day, it's a product owner who accepts the work, but I've seen them vary wildly in who's driving the conversation and what's happening there. And I guess I don't have a strong opinion of the product owner's role in that. I always coach to teams that if you get to the point of a sprint review where a product owner is not accepting your work, then you failed at Agile way before the review, yeah. Right? Yeah, your product owner should never be surprised when you sit down to do a review or a demo. They should be aware of what's happening at every point in your sprint. So
my reason for the passion behind this is just that I want to have the opportunity for the president of the business to come into a sprint review and actually understand what the hell we've been working on. And if we're in there talking about the optimization of an API call from 3 milliseconds to 2 milliseconds, that means nothing to him. But if we talk about the idea of optimizing a customer's checkout process or optimizing a login so that you no longer have to wait a period of time, I think then we're talking in terms of perceived value to the business folks. And I'm proud of the work that my team's doing. I'm proud of the idea of the agile practices for providing value faster. So I always want to wrap things back to the context of the guys that are writing the check to keep these teams funded, that they understand the return that they're getting beyond just the balance sheet.
And I think that's interesting. Good. You know, it's rare. You hear people, I shouldn't say rare. I don't walk into organizations and find that sort of perfect, or not even perfect, just positive experience because everyone's sort of starting. So it's, I think we could probably spin this off and probably will around, you know, sort of the next iteration of training the product owner. What's good training? How do you train your product owners within the organization or pulling them from outside the organization to come in and effectively do that? Is this a discipline that you learn outside the organization? Sort of what are some of the tools that you can sort of sharpen or hone in on, you know, if you want to sharpen the axe? Is I forget where I was where someone kept saying that and it stuck out of my head. So I want to sharpen the axe as a product owner. You know, how do I do that? How do I get better at it? What do I need to do to improve on those skills?
So there's two parts to that answer, I think. I mean, there's the key product owner skills, but there's also the having the voice of the customer, the market awareness. So it's first, everyone has to hone their craft. You have to understand facilitation. You have to understand communication. You have to understand the nuts and the bolts of a product, like what makes a good product owner. And as soon as you think you're good, realize you're not and start all over again. It's the way that I approach every discipline there is in the professional world. But I think product owners also need to enhance themselves by attending, sales conferences, going out on sales calls. If they can't physically go with the sales team because of just the nature of the organization, have regular meetings with sales and not just what are customers asking for, because that's not necessarily good product ownership. Understanding why customers are not buying, understanding the problems that the customers have.
Well, I think that that's not just true for the product owner, but that's great for your teams. I worked with one organization where they had a rotation where all the developers for the first 2 weeks they were there had to sit with customer care and help customer care answer the calls and hear what were the pain points, which I thought was such an amazing thing to do to really get the developers close to understanding their customers' problems. And that's not just a product owner. I mean, that's the product owner's primary role, but that's a great thing for so much of an organization to understand and be close to.
I completely agree. I think I think what I'm doing is I'm making the assumption that the product owner is not doing that well, then the rest of the team probably isn't either.
That's totally true. Yeah.
That could be I don't necessarily agree with that, but we can tackle that another night. I think.
All right, cool. Let's end this one fighting since we were agreeing. So.
I know. Right?
Tell me how wrong you are on that.
We've gotten to the angry portion of the podcast. But I think this is an interesting sort of discussion in the sense of it brings up the point that maybe the product owner role isn't really well defined across the board. I know within Scrum and some of the other frameworks, it is, within the Agile space, there's a definition around it. But is it truly being implemented well and true to whatever discipline you're going to implement it at? So I think, with the wealth of knowledge that we have on the podcast tonight, I think it's unclear. you know, what sort of is best practice around sort of that product owner role, and let's strip the agile, you know, sort of buzzword off of it. And let's say the product owner as a role, what sort of is the true premise of what makes a good product owner in anything, whether it's waterfall, whether it's just for as a business advocate, what does that mean? So I know we could keep riffing for the next 3 hours with this crew, but I think for our listeners' sake on the uprising, I think we'll kind of time box this and keep it to close to an hour or a little longer and sort of try and wrap this up. And we'll definitely have a follow-up on this. So,
well, I think it's worth saying that we'll definitely have a thread going on the Coalition site, you know, coalition.agileuprising.com. And I think this is the beginning of the conversation, not the entire conversation, as you were saying, Andrew. I'd ask anybody, like, specifically me, if you disagree with anything I'm saying, throw me the heat. Give me all you got. I look forward to it.
Well, and I want to hear from the product owners out there. I mean, you tell us what's hard about your role, what leads to your success and feeling like you are in line both with the company's values and agile values in serving your team and serving the customer. I mean, you said at the beginning, this is one of the hardest jobs in Agile. It's probably one of the most misunderstood and or least appreciated, right? So I want to hear from the product owners out there. Like, you tell us what do you look for in finding a peer, in finding a mentor? Because it seems really hard to find the people that are great at this.
Yeah. I agree. And it's teaching people how to say no is a really tough exercise. So it's not a very easy thing to do. It seems so simple when you explain it, but no is an extremely hard thing to say. So I think this is great. I mean, I look forward to reading, you know, we'll definitely throw the discussion out there on coalition.agileuprising.com. And again, make sure that everyone is sort of jumping on there and adding their sort of insight. So I want to kick it over to Colleen and Ryan and see if you guys have anything do you have any speaking engagements coming up? Is there anything you want to sort of promote?
Yeah, I'll be at Agile Camp Dallas December 5th. I'll be at Silicon Valley Agile Leadership Network December 13th and the Tri-Valley Agile Meetup March 22nd, and definitely a plug for Mile High Agile May 22nd and 23rd in Denver, Colorado. Our call for speakers is open right now, and we'd love to have people come, especially product owners, right? We tend to have a lot of people on the agile coaching and transformation side of the house presenting, and it would be amazing to have a strong product contingent there to share their stories. So submit.
Yeah, so I've got three talks submitted for Mile High. Is it the Mile High Conference?
Mile High Agile, yeah.
Yeah, so I have three or four talks submitted for that. So I might be there.
So your goal is to beat Ryan.
Yeah, and one of them is customer centric. So I will be talking about the product owner if I get accepted. But I have I have an Agile Philly talk for the Center City chapter. January 24th, I'm doing the second full-day lean product development course out in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And I don't think I have anything else booked because of the holiday season. But I will take any followers that I can get on Twitter at AgilePHL. Get me over 2,000.
That's great. So I don't have anything to promote. I can promote again the Coalition site at Agile Uprising. You know, please make sure you're a member and checking out what's going on over there, as well as just being part of the community. It's a great way to sort of get ingrained in sort of the discussions and allowing us to continue to do things like this. So we love to hear the feedback. We want people to help participate. So thank you very much. Thank you both for jumping on the podcast tonight. And we're going to wrap it up. And we publish our podcasts every Monday. So keep looking out for new podcasts every Monday. And that's all I got, guys.
Thanks, you guys. This is great.
Cool. Thanks.